Welcome into this Golf Channel podcast presented by Top Golf. I'm Rex Hoggard, and it's my pleasure to be joined by 11-time PGA Tour winner John Cook, calling all the way from Scotland, St. Andrews, the home of golf. Cookie, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Rex. Anytime.
Well, we want to talk PGA Championship, obviously with the PGA going back to Belle Reve, where you have quite a bit of history, good history. And I did want to touch a little bit on the Open Championship last week. But before we get to that, I was just scrolling through the internet. And according to one website, The Ohio State University is preseason fourth in the rankings. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I'm okay with that. Yeah, just kind of, you know, climbing the ladder. They got to, you know, they have to show against Oregon State, and then they have a tough game with TCU. I think if they get through TCU, they'll kind of show the country that they are good, and they should be good. They have a lot of players back. All their skill positions are back. New quarterback with Dwayne Haskins, who's just a incredible talent, and they just kind of restock. So we'll see how quickly the team can blend and get on the same page. And if they do, I'm fine with four. Give them something to strive for.
Now, as a true Buckeye fan, I'm going to ask this with all honesty: would you rather beat Michigan this year or make the playoffs if you had to choose one?
Well, I think in order to make the playoffs, we'd have to beat Michigan. So, of course, beat Michigan. Of course. That's day number one.
It's not even a debate, is it? It's always going to be beat Michigan.
No, I'm not even allowed to say it. In my house, you know, my dad was a coach there at Ohio State, and we can't even say it. Can't wear blue, can't say it, can't sign our name in blue. Just can't. So that's just the way it is.
All right, moving ahead in golf a little bit. Obviously, going to Belle Reve, first time the PGA has been there since 1992. You were actually paired with Nick Price, the winner that year, in the final round. What do you remember about that final round, Cookie?
I believe that Nick and I weren't even the second group. I think we were the third group from the last. But for some reason that day, I thought that the winner was going to come out of our group. I had just had a nice week at the Open Championship at Muirfield just a couple weeks prior, so I knew my game was in shape. Pricey was just still, you know, playing good. He was kind of that guy that was, you know, just knocking on the door all the time. I just thought that something good was going to happen to our group, and lo and behold, with, you know, 15 holes to play, it was basically, you know, Nick and I, coming down the stretch, although I made a bogey towards the end, I think on 18, to, you know, let a bunch of other players tie for second. Nick ended up winning by three, but I thought the whole day that it would come down to the two of us, and we both played very, very nicely, basically the whole way. It was an incredible week on a golf course that nobody was really that familiar with. So, just to have that chance on Sunday. And coming down the stretch, having a chance was a great thrill.
Now, you shot a third round 67 to really put yourself into contention. And you have done this throughout the course of your career. You've come close on Sunday at a major championship. Would you consider this the one where you got the closest?
I think a couple weeks prior at the Open Championship at Muirfield, that was the one where I had both hands on that trophy. I was in command. I was in control. I let that one slip away. Nick, you know, Sir Nick Faldo, Hall of Famer, of course, you know, and ended up winning. But I think that if we all go back and we watch, that was mine, and I gave that one away. Belle Reve, I think in '92, just a couple weeks later, I felt like I was in control, and I felt like I knew what I needed to do down the stretch to, you know, hang with Nick, because we were playing together. Couple weeks prior, Nick Faldo's group was well behind us. We were in the group in front of him, so you never really got a good sense, you know, what you actually needed to do. But there at Belle Reve, I knew it was going to come down to Nick Price and I, and so I knew what I needed to do. You know, I just didn't quite execute well enough coming down the stretch on 17 and 18. 17 was a birdie hole. I didn't make birdie. Nick did. And then on 18, I tried to force the issue and made a mistake. But other than that, I had two weeks in a row where, you know, I felt like I was, you know, pretty much in solid control of my game and just needed to finish it out. And you know what? I didn't do it. And it, you know, I can tell you, Rick, it's a major disappointment in my career. I think about it all the time, and it's not a great list to be on. You know, one of those not winning a major championship list. But you know what? It is what it is. And I remember the experience at Belrive, very vividly. I think it was, at least, I gave myself a chance. I gave myself some chances and just didn't quite, come through at the end.
And you hear guys talk about this all the time, Cookie, about how you draw from those previous experiences. Can you vividly remember on Sunday at Belrive letting your mind wander back to the feelings, the emotions you had at Mirrorfield just a few weeks earlier, and using that as either motivation or maybe as a learning tool?
I do, and I did, Rex. I told myself to not get ahead. I knew what I needed to do because I was playing with Nick. I knew exactly what I needed to do. I could control what I was doing. With previously at the Open Championship, I really didn't know because, quite frankly, Nick Faldo's group was so far behind us. Just even being the group behind us, they were at least two holes behind us. So you never got a really good feel of where the scoring was. I knew what I needed to do. I couldn't quite get a good grasp of what he was doing behind me. A lot of times you can feel that. Well, playing in that group with Nick Price, I knew exactly what was going on, and so those were the experiences. And, I had won some tournaments. I had won two that year already in '92, so I knew what it took to finish it out. And I didn't execute down the stretch.
And you talked about Belrive being a new venue even back in '92. There was probably a learning curve involved. What will be the learning curve for the field in 2 weeks when they go back?
It'll be a golf course that they are not familiar with. It's not really on that rota that that you're so familiar with. A lot of these great golf courses that you get to go back to, every 10, 12 years or 5, 8 years, they're in that kind of rotation where Belrive, haven't played since '92. So that's 26 years ago. So that's a long time ago. So there's probably very few players on that will be playing at Belrive that actually even played in that tournament. So they'll have to learn a brand new golf course. I'm sure it's changed a little bit even from '92. It was long back then. I'm sure it's longer now. So they'll have to get a good look and prepare. Those practice rounds are really going to have to count.
Anything stand out? I did notice at the closing stretch, 16, 17, 18, you go par 3, par 5, par 4. But is there anything else about the golf course that maybe stands out to you?
I remember the 10th hole being an incredibly difficult par 4. A tough drive, a long second over a hazard. And the front side, I think you kind of get through. There's a couple birdie opportunities there. But I think the closing nine, once you get past, I think, maybe number 11 or so, there's really not many scoring opportunities. The 15th hole is a wonderful par 3 that is quite long. 16 is a nice par 4. 17 is a par 5 that if you hit a good drive, you should take advantage of it. And 18 is just a strong, strong finishing hole. So it's a finish to a major championship that you kind of look for, where there's one scoreable hole. And then three survival holes from 15 on in.
Now, you mentioned it being long. It was actually almost 7,200 yards back in 1992, and it is going to be longer this year. Considering we're just coming from Carnoustie, which was not a bomber's course by any stretch of the definition, would you say this is going back to something a little bit more familiar, that this will be a bomber's golf course?
I think so, Rex. I think unless it's playing firm and fast, which I doubt that time of year it will be, because it's going to be hot. I imagine they've had some rain. I think the golf course, I don't think they could get the golf course too firm just because of the conditions. The grass back then, if I'm not mistaken, was maybe a zoysia. I'm not sure what the fairways are this time. If it's not playing firm and fast, it will play extremely long. I'm going to guess probably close to 7,600 yards. So the guys will be, they're used to getting those the golf ball to chase out, I'm not so sure, you know, what the conditions are going to allow them to do, if they're going to be able to control their golf ball, or like at Carnoustie where that golf ball just didn't stop going until it just lost all its energy.
I think some golf balls are still rolling down fairways at Carnoustie.
I think you're right.
All right, given the scouting report you just gave us for Belle Reve, give me a win, place, and show, your top three options for going into the PGA.
Well, you know, there's the top guys that come to mind, of course, are, you know, DJ coming off of just a horrible Carnoustie where the 18th hole just, you know, ate him alive. Otherwise, maybe perhaps he might have had some decent opportunity. But I think, you know, Dustin, you're going to have to look at. I don't think that he's happy with his year at all. I think he's, you know, hopefully he's gotten a little, you know, a little serious, gone back to the rock pile and kind of dug it out in the dirt. You know, Brooks Koepka, of course, is going to be a factor. Rory, you would have to think, you know, coming off, you know, such an emotional couple months. Does Francesco Molinari figure in the mix? He's not a bomber of the golf ball, but boy, does he hit it with, you know, he strikes it with precision. He knows where that golf ball is going. He's the hot item right now. You know, those are the types of players that I think will, you know, whoever gets hot with that driver wreck, I think is going to be that guy. Can Tiger be that guy? If he gets hot with the driver and comfortable, he's not going to be able to play like he did at Carnoustie and hit, you know, stinging two irons and three woods and three irons off those tees. He's going to have to get that big stick out of the bag. And, you know, if he gets hot with the driver, we know what he can do with his irons. It's just a matter of getting that tee ball in play. So those are those guys. Whoever gets up on, you know, those tees and those par fours, those long par fours, and is hot with that driver, and he's just looking down that center of the fairway and not missing, you know, left or right. Those are those guys to look for.
All right, you beat me to the punch. It's not a golf podcast without bringing up Tiger at least once. So given those ideas that, and I agree, he will have to hit the driver well at a place like Belle Reve. What you have seen in his body of work up to this point, obviously his putting is vastly improved over the last couple of weeks. How would you rate his chances at Belle Reve?
I think they'll be good, Rex. What I've seen, you know, so far this year has been, you know, kind of almost, I'm going to say it's like a cone-shaped thing where, you know, the top of that cone, you know, was Torrey Pines and L.A. and then into the Honda, and he starts tighten up as the year has gone on, and he's having those chances down the stretch and, you know, relearning how to win. We as professional golfers, when you have time off, you don't forget how to play golf. Sometimes you forget how to get to those positions, and once you're in those positions, you don't forget how to win. You forget how to get there. So, you know, for Tiger, it's just a, you know, being comfortable in that uncomfortable situation again. And like we've seen just in the last few weeks, he's got game enough to get there. And I know that he's frustrated. I talked to him, you know, a couple weeks ago, you know, just after his event there at TPC Potomac, he's just making mistakes that he's not used to making. And that's not the Tiger Woods that we know closing out golf tournaments. So, you know, he'll go back and he'll figure it out. He's given himself chances, and that's the really good thing. Now we want to see that, you know, Tiger Woods of yesteryear where, you know, if he was at or near the lead, it was a done deal. He didn't make the mistakes down the stretch that he's been making the last couple of months. So, you know, that being said, he's got to get control of that driver, and he cannot be afraid to hit that driver, because Belle Reve is going to ask that question on, can you stand up on these uncomfortable tee shots and hit driver and be comfortable doing it?
When he finished up on Sunday at Carnoustie, Rory McIlroy made a comment about Tiger, how, you know, he was obviously happy to have him back in the mix and seeing his name on a leaderboard. But he did make the comment that this is not the same guy. And by that, he meant this isn't the same player who Phil faced, who Ernie faced, who you faced in his prime. Would you agree with that comment?
I do, Rex, and only because until he finishes one out, he will not be that Tiger, because that Tiger I would never have let any of those events go. At least would have gotten in playoffs, and then see what happened. But then to to have those opportunities and just not be there at the end to have a chance. That is not the Tiger Woods that, we all knew. So I think that Rory is correct in that. That coming down that stretch, you want to see that old Tiger Woods that basically shut everybody out. And once that name was up there on that board at the top, well, that was pretty much a done deal. Who's playing for second? Well, it's not that case anymore. But until Tiger closes that one deal, closes the event strong, instead of letting things go. And a lot of times you'll get beat coming down the stretch, but Tiger's kind of beating himself up and making those mistakes. So until we see him actually finish out strong, whether he wins or not, if he finishes strong, that'll be that'll be that next little level to get to.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here and make you Ryder Cup captain for the day, U.S. Ryder Cup captain, because I know I know how you would pick for the European team. But as it stands now, 1 through 8, the automatic qualifiers, and of course that will come to an end after the PGA when they will get locked in. But currently it's Brooks Koepka, DJ, Patrick Reed, Justin Thomas, Bubba, Jordan Spieth, Ricky, and Webb Simpson. You have an idea of the guys behind them. If you had to make your picks today, your four picks, who would they be?
Boy, that's a good one as well. And I think that I would probably, I would have to go 9 and 10. I would give them, they've played too hard for a couple years to be in the top 10 and not make it. I think that you have to play while your results kind of show at 9 and 10 that, you're close enough and you were right there. So I would go with 9 and 10.
9 and 10, Bryson and Phil Mickelson. So, yep, I see where you're going with that.
Okay, now you don't have to, you don't have to pick Phil. So now you're, now you've got two free picks, basically. And, I'm going to go out and people think I'm a Tiger homer. Okay, I get it. Yes, some of us are, some of us are not. But I think the body of work that he has shown and the enthusiasm that he has for it, and we'll see how he plays, the next couple weeks at, Firestone and the PGA. I think that Tiger would be a great pick to have another veteran in the locker room. I think that would be great. And then I'd wait until, after the FedEx Cup to pick my last on who's that guy that's, going to play those four events and play him the best. Pick him. Got to go with the hot hand.
No, I see what you're saying, and I would not call you a Tiger homer. You've competed against him at his absolute best, so I would leave that for other people. But of those players you just mentioned, where you would mix in at that point, Kuchar, Kisner, Tony Finau, Brian Harman, these players, and that's the beauty of that final pick. You do have to,
right.
Do get to wait until after the Tour Championship.
Yeah, if any of those guys, you got to take a hard look at Kevin Kisner. I think he's a kind of a role player. He'd be that guy that you would draft. To be that guy, but he's got to show something, Rex. He's got to show something. The last few events of this season, he's got to show, that he deserves that spot. And I know he's inside the top 20, so, it wouldn't be a radical pick, but if he shows anything in the next 4 or 5, 6 weeks, I think the Kiz would be a great pick because he just has that thing. He's got that stink to him, and that's what you need. A good putter. You need a guy that's a good putter to finish out matches, and he would not be a radical pick at all.
Now, you've known Jim Furyk, this year's captain, for a long time, and you've played under a lot of different captains. What do you think his style is going to be like heading over to Paris?
I think that he's going to allow his vice captain to kind of help him out. I think that ultimately he's a strong guy. If you look at Jim Furyk and you kind of look at that golf swing and you go, oh my gosh. And then you look at what he's done, you go, oh my gosh. Right. So, I think that his style is, I don't really care, guys, what it looks like or who it is. We want to get it done. And here's how I got it done. And I think it'll have a little bit of his personality to it. He's a good guy. He's a great guy in the locker room. I think that he can take some authority, but I also think that he can rely on his captains to help him along. So I think that he will be very authoritative, but I think he's just going to let the players win the Ryder Cup for the U.S.
And does it fit into that sort of persona that suddenly you have a captain and you talked about these scrappy players? You brought up Kevin Na. I think Brian Harmon would fit into that category as well, where he would almost lean in that direction because that's the kind of player he identifies. Would that be fair?
Well, that could be. Maybe he wants, someone like that with Brian Harmon, Kevin Na. But I think that Kevin Kisner kind of fits into that mold as well. So I think that, having some experience on a U.S. team, I think might outweigh, the grittiness of a Kevin Na and a Brian Harmon, because you have that in Kevin Kisner, and you have that, I think you have that spark with Kevin. So I think, as long as it depends really on, those three or four players on how they play in the next, 4 or 5 weeks on, what's going to happen. As far as Captain Furyk's 12th man.
I was reluctant to ask this, given as we just addressed the Michigan-Ohio State issue that's going on inside the Cook household since you were very, very little. But it was Jim Harbaugh who recently brought this up, that they should expand the college football playoffs from 4 teams to 8 teams and eventually 16 teams. Your thoughts?
I don't like 16 at all. I could go with 8. I could actually go with 6.
How can you make 6 work?
I think that 8, the 6 you'd have a play-in game, have a couple play-in games.
Okay.
To the 4, but or you just go with 8, because last year certainly there was 8 teams that probably could have done some damage. So I could go with 8, no problem. 16's too many. You start to water down a little bit.
All right, fair enough. And as I said, you're calling from Scotland at the Senior Open. You were at the Open Championship last week. Give me, in this final question, your best meal you've had over the last 2 weeks.
Best meal?
There aren't too many of them over there. I was there last week. You don't get too many good ones.
I have to admit that the first night that we were here, here in St. Andrews, we went just up the street to the Dunvegan. And had a great little meal with the ex-owners, Jack and Sheila. That's right. And we had a big table, and we had everybody that's on this crew was there. And I had a beautiful filet with this little jalapeno sauce on it. I had some steamed veggies, and that was pretty good. Otherwise, you kept chips with everything, so I can't go with chips every single night, so I had to have some steamed veggies with it.
You've been there 2 weeks, so you're calling them chips. I get it. No, I understand. French fries, you're calling them chips. I got it. Cookie, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, pal.
My pleasure, Rex. Anytime, bud.
Safe travels. Thanks for listening to this Golf Channel podcast presented by Top Golf. The Golf Channel podcast is available on golfchannel.com/podcast and your favorite podcast provider. So go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Golf Channel Podcast and subscribe. If you love the show, be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.